Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. The COVID-19 pandemic has caused all manner of new challenges for children and parents as they struggle to cope with the disruptions caused by school closures and remote learning. And as is always the case, the challenge has been that much greater for the children of low-income and minority families, who tend to include a lot more frontline workers and a lot less housing stability. Fortunately, as I learned in a recent conversation with Muffy Grant, the executive director of the North Carolina Early Childhood Foundation, not all the news is bad, and there are some obvious policy choices out there, many of which, like fully funding public schools and closing the state's health insurance gap, predate the pandemic and remain eminently affordable. Muffy Grant, welcome to News and Views. Good to have you back with us.
Good to be with you. Thanks for having me, Rob.
You are the executive director of the North Carolina Early Childhood Foundation, which is an organization with an enormously important mission and impossible probably to list all the things you do, but maybe you could give our listeners just a brief overview of sort of what's going on with the group these days.
Right. Well, our mission at the Early Childhood Foundation is to marshal our state's great people, ideas, and achievements to ensure equitable access to opportunity and success for every North Carolina child by the end of third grade. And what this means, what success for us looks like, is that North Carolina's people, agencies, and organizations work collaboratively towards a common goal, agreeing on how to measure progress, coordinating strategies that take into account all aspects of children's healthy development, and aligning policies and practices with the measures and along the developmental continuum starting at birth.
It's obviously an enormously important and challenging task in these times in which we have so many different points of view on so many issues. And of course, all of this has been made just that much more difficult by the state of the world right now, which is the COVID-19 pandemic and the impact that's having. We've seen some recent indicators that perhaps that our students are not doing well on standardized tests in the public school system. Is that really the case? What's the situation when it comes to the reading that our kids are engaging in right now?
So the report, just to level set here, is not yet released. Okay. That's going to be coming in September. So this news that we're getting, or the pre-report, while alarming, is premature. Mm-hmm. And the lead has been buried. So just for context, the CUT scores or benchmark scores were developed through a new process. So a direct comparison to last year's results is really apples to oranges and not indicative of learning loss, this notion of learning loss due to the pandemic. We know that there has been loss to instructional time. And we know that prior to the pandemic, about 63% of fourth graders were not proficient in reading. And then when we disaggregate that data by race and ethnicity and income, the stats are even more alarming. And we also weren't using the tools that we know are needed for early literacy. And there's support and commitment from both the governor's office and the North Carolina General Assembly across the political aisle. The business community has helped to bring state actors together, along with the Department of Public Instruction, to work to really try to crack this nut once and for all, because our literacy scores have been stagnated since the 90s.
What are some of the specific strategies that y'all have identified and others have identified, and maybe there's some agreement on, that we need to be pursuing? It would seem like there's a long list, but are there some that really stand out that we need to do a better job of pursuing?
Well, sure. And there are some exciting investments that are happening in the state right now, which can turn this around and get us started on a path to fixing the issue. Because just this week, actually, the contract was approved for all North Carolina teachers, pre-K to fifth grade, to receive rigorous training in the science of reading, which is a phonics-based approach. Mm-hmm. And because of this approval, teachers will receive this training within the next month. So it's happening. It's starting. We're getting our kids what we know is evidence-based instruction. Superintendent Truitt and her leadership at the Department of Public Instruction established the Office of Learning Recovery with really significant, you know, for education, net new dollars to be divided up among all of the North Carolina school districts, which includes charters. It's interesting, though, there are many known strategies. I mean, we have to go across all the domains of early childhood, health, social, emotional and academic in order to achieve these third grade reading proficiency benchmarks that we know are proxies for child well-being and for future success. But just kind of framing a little bit out about what might have been lost in this past year, there's some interesting local county research to consider. So there was some research done by Tanya Turner, who's the superintendent of Perquimans County Schools. For her doctoral dissertation, she took 2019-2020 academic year third graders who did not experience school closure at the beginning of the year and middle of the year, and took that their reading scores data. And this was done, you know, through a non-experimental, just quantitative study to compare to the 2020-2021 third graders who did experience that closure. And so their beginning of year, the numbers show that the students who did experience closure in 2020 started behind, but it wasn't statistically significant. Mm-hmm. And they actually surpassed the non-school closure cohort on the middle of the year assessment. We need to have our hair on fire about, you know, the social emotional aspects and the toll that it's taking on our children and their development in that aspect, mm-hmm. and not be so tethered to this notion of learning loss. And there's sure to be a huge portfolio of research and analyses coming out about the pandemic school years with very special focused attention, you know, to reading and math scores. So we can all stay tuned there.
I guess there's some hopeful indicators there. Perhaps it's a situation in which the pandemic is a problem, but it's not going to be a fatal problem to teaching our kids what they need to learn. One issue that, of course, stands out long before the pandemic and that continues to remain a huge issue for so many kids is just the basic question of poverty and the question of having right. access to resources. And I presume that that remains something that is a huge roadblock to achieving what we need to achieve for our kids in terms of just, you know, having enough to eat, having a safe place to live and sleep. And that's got to be a bit, as big of a problem in many instances for kids as anything else.
Absolutely, it is. And we need to discuss this larger notion of learning loss, which is such a deficit frame. You know, we have to shift to asset-based language. Students experience interruptions to instructional time. And yes, their trajectories changed during the past 18 months, but they didn't stop learning and developing. And for those most proximate to the problems, you know, namely BIPOC families and those with lower economic mobility, our current system reveals the pandemic has disproportionately affected them. Mm-hmm. Since many of the heads of households in these families are frontline workers, so there's been more sustained illness and death and economic loss. For some, there's immigration status fears, lack of access to the technologies that kept them engaged in their course of education. So, you know, sometimes you have to unlearn things to learn them the right way. And right. that's what we're doing now through this dynamic situation that we experienced in the pandemic and all of the isolation of remote learning, the exacerbated disparities that you're touching on there. And we're finally reckoning with the science of reading and taking bold steps and really unprecedented investment as a state to implement evidence-based practice and the mechanics, you know, of how we read. And reading is just one metric in how well we as a state and as a society invest in our children. And we really, really, really need to fund Leandro in order to get our students on the best trajectory to close gaps and meet the needs of the future workforce.
That's really the elephant, one of the big elephants in the room, when a lot of folks still probably don't recognize what we're talking about there, but that's the longstanding mandate from our state Supreme Court. And we've had a judge come forth and a panel of experts come up with what we need to do, what we need to fund to actually lift our public education system up. And thus far, we're still not seeing that coming from the General Assembly or the upcoming budget that they're considering right now.
Right. You know, there's so many things about this House budget that have come out that really it's a missed opportunity in a number of ways. You know, we know that children are not in a vacuum. They exist within a family, within a community. And there's so many, you know, top line things that were missed opportunities, and then also things specific to early childhood, which of course is the purview of the North Carolina Early Childhood Foundation, but missing the opportunity to draw down $1.7 billion to provide healthcare for over 500,000 people, to stabilize rural hospitals and strengthen behavioral health system. Like, that's not happening through Medicaid. And it could be.
The failure to expand Medicaid, remains on the agenda.
And, you know, missing the opportunity to make significant recurring investments in childcare and to stabilize what was a fragile system before the pandemic and is now in a state of real crisis, the North Carolina Pre-K program and Smart Start. There's much work to be done. We're hopeful. We really felt, I would say, as a group of early childhood advocates, a strong wind of change and progress coming. And it's unfortunate that it took a global pandemic to bring that huge feeling of momentum. And now with this budget revealed, it really feels like the wind is out of our sails. In fact, one of my colleagues at a meeting said that the other day. And what we're offered through, you know, reconciliation and negotiation with the governor is that, you know, there's a gentle breeze. There is some hope to come out of this, but we really do need to invest in our young children. If we want to have a North Carolina that is prepared for the future, this is fundamentally where we need to start at the beginning.
Muffy Grant is the executive director of the North Carolina Early Childhood Foundation. We thank you so much for the work you do, the advocacy you perform. It's an important cause, and sometimes it's difficult, we know, and the circumstances can be tough, but we really appreciate you keeping up the good work, and we really hope you'll have some impact on this final state budget and that we'll continue to move forward through these difficult times.
Really grateful for your time, Rob. Thank you so much for having me on.
Coming up next, a Duke University scholar and counterterrorism expert weighs in on the rapidly unfolding events in Afghanistan. Stay with us.